Hello, and welcome to another edition of the ChannelBuzz.ca podcast. I'm Robert Dutt, editor of ChannelBuzz.ca, and as always, your party host with some great interviews of high-profile figures in the channel community. We've got a big show for you today, the penultimate episode of 2014 campaign. First up, we'll be joined by Steve Phillips, CIO of Avnet Inc., who has unique perspective as both a Fortune 500 CIO and someone who's very familiar with the channel by virtue of the company he works for. Steve will chat with us about what's on his agenda for innovation heading into 2015, as well as what he sees his fellow CIOs focusing on. Next up, we're joined by Sean Massey, Channel Sales Manager for StorageCraft, to discuss the backup and recovery vendor's new extensions of its recoverability platform into virtualized environments. And we round out the show with more predictions for 2015, as we're joined by Hitachi Data Systems CTO Uyoshida, who shares what he sees as the big items heading into next year. That's the lineup. Let's get right into it. All right, joining us now to provide a CIO's view of the market and the technology industry right now is Steve Phillips, CIO of Avnet. Steve, thanks for taking the time.
Hi, Rob. Glad to be here.
It's I think it's interesting for our readership because you provide both the view of a CIO and the view of someone who obviously being in the industry or in distribution understands the channel and what solution providers do. So appreciate your taking the time.
Thank you.
So we're just around the corner from 2015, and as always, it looks like it'll be an interesting one. From your seat as CEO, what are the top trends on your radar? What's getting you interested these days?
So as Avnet CIO, we're just starting to we're going to be kicking off our annual planning process in January 2015. So very much for me and my team, we are sort of looking ahead at this point. To think about what the big trends are, not just from an IT perspective within Avnet, but also more broadly in the marketplace, of course. And I'd say I've got four big things in my mind right now. First one would be the Internet of Things. So we've heard a lot about that this year, and you can just start to see the technology start to put into place the ecosystem around IoT, and I think there's going to be a lot of momentum on that in 2015. I would also offer that mobility enablement is something we've seen build up over the last couple of years, and going to see a lot of action there. It is a mobile enabling our web properties. I think that ties in with things like bring your own device and choose your own device as well. Mm-hmm. Then I'd say security is an evergreen topic for many IT shops. We heard a lot about very high-profile breaches in 2014, and unfortunately, I think we're going to continue to hear lots of news like that in 2015. So, data loss prevention and how do enterprises protect their information is going to be another emphasis area. And then the last of my top list of four for 2015 would be big data. And I think we've seen a lot of focus on the technology around big data. What many enterprises are now getting to grips with is how do you manage all of that data? How do you take all of that information that you've now made accessible, that you're collecting, you're making accessible, and how do you start to use that to drive real business value in an enterprise? So those would be my top four, Rob.
And those are four big ones. This year has really, as I think you keyed on, in 2013 and before, we heard about Internet of Things, but this year has really had the rocket attached to it in terms of hot topic. How do you see the Internet of Things story progressing in the business world in 2015?
Well, I think what we've seen, and as Avnet, we have insight into. Into not only the technology sector from an IT perspective, but also from an embedded systems and electronic components perspective as well. We see a lot of activity going on in terms of the sensors, the capabilities to monitor information, certain parametric data out there in the field. We've seen an emphasis on the analytic systems that can collect, store, and start to manage that data. And we're also seeing the networks, the data networks across the world, whether those are private networks or public networks, start to be geared up to handle the increases in data volumes that are going to be going across across those networks. So I just see the infrastructure getting laid down, some of the use cases starting to come into place, and I think we're just going to see good momentum in 2015 in that space.
All right. If you were betting on it, what kind of technology investments will you and your peers and CIO chairs around the industry be making in the Internet of Things next year?
Our rather tactical focus right now is upgrading our data networks so we can handle what we're expecting to be a significantly increased volumes of data going across mm-hmm. those networks. And then within the data center, getting ready to be able to handle more storage of data, be more flexible in the solutions that we store that data on, so more tiering type solutions, because you have different quality of storage systems, perhaps from a response time perspective, perhaps from a speed of access perspective, and we're looking at improving our tiering capabilities within the data center as well.
All right, great. Let's, the second thing you mentioned was mobility. In the last few years, certainly ideas like bring your own device and choose your own device have become kind of the accepted norm for a lot of organizations. What do you see IT teams needing to focus on next in terms of the mobility world? It's an ever-evolving space.
Well, I think the first sort of thing that comes to my mind is around the actual devices themselves. So if enterprises do have a bring-your-own-device policy, we do at Avnet, and we've had one for many years, making sure that you've got the correct security capabilities in place. So so we have a policy that when people have their own device, we do partition off company data on that device from personal data. So that does take MDM tools. To make sure that you can protect and handle differently enterprise data. So companies need to make sure they're investing in that area and they do have that control over the information that does belong to the enterprise. And then I think the second theme that I have on my mind here is as people come to Avnet, as they access our web properties, either to get information, perhaps, or to conduct self-service transactions, etc. How do you make sure that your web properties are presented in a way that's friendly for being accessed on a mobile device rather than the more typical computer screen? And there we're investing in concepts like responsive design, where our web properties become aware of the type of device you're accessing our information on, mm-hmm. and then changing the way that information is presented based on that particular device, whether it's a laptop or desktop or a tablet or a smartphone.
All right. So you touch on sort of separation of corporate and personal data and that sort of thing. But what other best practices do you guys have at Avnet in terms of managing those mobile devices? You know, both including the applications and that corporate content.
Well, I think we have this differentiation between enterprise data and personal data. So we have a container-based approach there. We're also being more structured in our use of mobile apps for accessing our information. Avnet launched its first app store just a month ago. So on avnet.com, at the bottom of the homepage, you can download the Avnet app store. Mm-hmm. And there we've partitioned between employee applications, customer applications, and then partner applications. And our view is where people need to access on a regular basis, an app is a very good approach to being very efficient in allowing that transaction to take place. And then for less frequent type transactions or presenting information that our customers may use to help make design decisions, for example, or to source products, we feel the responsive design approach where we present that information without the need to download an app is more appropriate there.
All right. The third pillar you mentioned was security, and I think you're right in saying an evergreen space. Perhaps unfortunately from a CIO's point of view and somewhat fortunately from a solution provider's point of view. You touched in on the DLP, data loss prevention aspect in your earlier comments. What's driving that thought?
Well, what we've seen over the years, and we're typical of many companies, so I don't think we're anything special or different here, is we've just seen the amount of activity in this space increase. We read about some very sophisticated attempts by outside parties to get hold of information within the enterprise. And for us, we've data loss prevention is about detecting what's going on your network, and that of course is masses of information. And then, what tools do you have to help you to make sense of that information and identify potential activity that could indicate somebody to break into your network, or somebody potentially taking information out of your environment, out on the internet? Our challenge, of course, as IT leaders, is to conduct business today. We need to allow the easy flow of information. And our challenge is, how do we delineate between good information that should be being passed back and forth on our network versus activity that indicates bad activity and information that shouldn't be being transitioned out of the organization. So we have some tools there that it's really a big data type of capability that monitor all of our data network activity and look for suspicious activity, and then we go and investigate on that immediately.
All right. Any other areas of security that you think will be hot burner topics next year?
I'll mention something that we do at Avnet, and we will continue doing it in 2015. Mm-hmm. Couple of best practices. They're not so technical, but they're very important, I think. So what we've learned from some of the breaches that have been publicized over the last year or so is you're as strong as every employee in your company, that you have this emphasis on people protecting their personal information, perhaps their logon credentials, etc. And we have quite an emphasis at Avnet on educating every one of our employees about suspicious activity, what to do if they see suspicious activity, about protecting their logon credentials, and about taking care of their devices. So we've had quite an emphasis on education, and I expect that to continue in 2015. The other thing that I'd mention as well that I think is a good practice is we recently just conducted it. We periodically conduct data breach, cyber breach drills, mm-hmm. Where we run a scenario with a third party, and we test out our ability to respond to a breach, an actual breach incident. So it's a drill. It's not real, but we take it very seriously. We involve our business leaders as well as our IT leaders and IT engineers. And our general philosophy is that practicing doesn't guarantee you won't have a breach, of course, and it doesn't guarantee that you respond to a breach appropriately. But it sure helps when you've thought through your process and communication and how you would handle a breach. So that's something we've recently conducted, and we will continue conducting those in 2015 as well.
Appreciate that that feedback. You know, we always hear, especially when it comes to backup and recovery and those kinds of things, these are things that you have to drill, practice the recovery to make sure it can happen. And I think the same logic applies here. You have to make sure that you are as ready as you can be, in hopes that you never have to use that knowledge. The fourth trend that you mentioned off the top was big data, which kind of wraps up some aspects of everything else in many ways. What kind of data management issues have you guys and your fellow enterprises been having?
Well, we've had a focus, I think, like many companies, on putting the right technology in place that enables a big data analytics capability. And what we've been doing in parallel with that, and we still have some work to do, and I suspect many other enterprises do as well, is when you start using big data to generate business insights, you really get to look at the quality of the data that you have. How good is it? How mm-hmm. consistent is it? Avnet's a global corporation. We operate in 80 countries across the world. We have over a petabyte of data in our data center. And a lot of that data is sourced from different systems. It's sourced in different parts. It's been generated in different parts of the world. And when you start getting into looking at big data sets, you really do want consistency of data. So you can look at apples with apples as you look across your business. So we've had a program of setting up a data stewardship program that gives specific responsibility for data consistency and accuracy to some of our leaders who are responsible for the units that generate that information. And we've also been standardizing, so we can make global comparisons across the world as to how our business units are performing and what insights and best practices we do see across the world as well.
All right, so you've got that consistency in data storage and management. Now, how do you take that that data, that petabyte, as you say, in your data centers worldwide, and incorporate it into business outcomes? Get the analytics going to benefit the business.
So I would say we're in a relatively early stage of this right now. So what we're doing is we have the data, we have some standardization of data, and we have the technology tools that allow business leaders to directly access that information. What we're doing in partnership as an IT team, in partnership with our business colleagues, we're asking what are some of the big questions that you've always wanted to know the answer to, but fundamentally it's been rather hard to do it historically. So how do you look at gross margin improvement? How do you look at business growth? How do you look at delivering more value to our customers by delivering more products as well as services, for example? And as you look at those business questions, then how can we use big data, the data, how can we unlock that over a petabyte of data that we have to help us to improve in the areas and hopefully deliver better customer experiences? So that's where we are. We're working on that right now, and I'm certainly looking forward to seeing some real tangible outcomes coming out in 2015 then.
All right. I think that's a journey for most everyone in the big data sphere is actually getting that knowledge unlocked, and good luck on the journey in 2015.
By the way, I really like that as you described that. It's exactly what it is. It's probably a never ending journey, isn't it? It's
absolutely not. It is. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Hard to have a conversation about enterprise technology in these last few years without using the word cloud. So let's talk a little bit about that. You know, obviously a trend that is still shaping the industry. Can you provide me with your perspective on how you see companies, yourselves and others, engaging in cloud in 2015?
I think, first of all, for enterprise IT, the cloud is going to be a very significant part of our IT landscape, and that's a fairly obvious statement. What I think is not quite so obvious is the pace of change as enterprises do move to more and more cloud solutions. And at what point as IT leaders, as business leaders, do we say that we've pretty much pushed everything into the cloud that we plan to? And in my mind, there's a limit to it. So I certainly for larger enterprises, I think there'll always be an aspect of a hybrid environment, some on-premise, some out in the cloud. There are some systems that, for example, at Avnet, we're very sensitive about, and that they'll probably be in-house and on-premise for a very long time indeed. And the easiest example I can think of are our warehouse systems. So Avnet runs very large, complex, sophisticated warehouses that get the product that we buy to our customers where and when it needs to be there. And those systems I see as staying physically close to our warehouses for quite some time. There are some other capabilities where we're very happy to put things into the cloud right now and get the benefits of flexible capacity and just terrific service levels from our partners. So I think the big question for 2015 is we've seen the trend. We can see things moving progressively to the cloud. I think that trend is accelerating. Mm-hmm. And the big big question for me in 2015 is how much progress will be made in 2015 with some of the big partners in terms of their cloud offerings in the marketplace. How scalable are they? And then for enterprise IT shops, how fast are they moving towards the cloud? So that growth path will be a very interesting metric to watch over the next year.
All right, great. Any other areas of emerging technology, whether it's corporate or stuff we think of today as consumer, that you're keeping a close eye on?
I'll mention something that comes to my mind there, and it came to my mind when you made the consumer connection there. I'm thinking of Google Glass. So over the last few years, we've seen Google Glass really positioned as a consumer offering. Mm-hmm. My personal view is it hasn't taken off quite as I suspect Google thought it would. And that there's some sort of challenges there in terms of widespread adoption, I think, in the consumer marketplace. One of the things that we're looking at is the role of Google Glass in the workplace. So Google does have a Google Glass in the workplace program that we're engaging with. We think there could be some really good work-based environment applications for Google Glass. We think about that both from an internal IT perspective as well as potentially as a go-to-market opportunity as well. And I'll give you just a simple example. We have a very sophisticated warehouse in Western Europe that we use for our technology solutions business. And we made quite some investment in there a few years ago. It's what we call a paperless warehouse. So when you go into this warehouse, it's quite manual in its nature. The nature of the product means there's some automation, but at the core of the operation are people that pick up work instructions to go and pick customer orders, which they collect together, and then we ship that to our customer. Today we have a voice system whereby each of the pickers has a headset. Mm-hmm. A portable scanner that they use, and they get instructed where to go to pick up the product. We think Google Glass could have a great application in terms of our pickers wearing it and being guided where to go to pick product, how to select it, how to update the system that they've selected, and then get a perfect order out to our customer. So we think there are some work-based applications there. For me, that's an exciting space. It's an exciting use of technology, and it could drive some real efficiencies for corporations.
All right. Funny you should key on that. Not exactly Google Glass, but I recently saw a demo of a glasses-style display and interface that could be used in aviation, particularly for small aviators. To have basically the full heads-up experience that one would have in a jet fighter or a high-end airliner. Certainly an interesting space. To close off the conversation, just wanted to take maybe a little bit of a different tack for one last question, and that's just to kind of get a little bit of a temperature check. You know, what's the mood of the technology industry, of the CIO community heading into 2015?
I'll offer my view, but I think it's consistent certainly with the CIOs that I talk to. So I've personally been in the business of IT for just about 20 years now. Mm-hmm. I've never been so excited as I am today about some of the shifts that are happening in technology. So on-premise to cloud, for example, mobility, some of the capabilities that technology is now enabling, like big data, like the Internet of Things. So I think it's a very exciting place. It's a time of great change, by the way, and it's also a time of great opportunity, I think, not just for the people bringing these products to market, but also for enterprise IT shops in terms of some of the things that we can now do with technology that were, frankly, the technology wasn't there years ago, or the general capabilities weren't there, or the price points were too prohibitive. Mm-hmm. There are some great opportunities coming forward, and as you can tell, I've never been as excited as I am today.
All right. Great. Well, Steve, once again, I appreciate your taking the time and all the best in turning that vision that you've described over the course of this interview into reality in 2015.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
Joining us once again is Sean Massey of StorageCraft, channel sales manager over there. Sean, thanks for taking the time. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks, Rob. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Wanted to talk to you a little bit about the concept of recoverability, which, of course, is sort of StorageCraft's mantra and mission statement, as well as how it is expanding into the virtual world. For those who maybe haven't seen the video on the site or heard the message before, can you just give us a little bit of a rundown on recoverability and what that means to you guys and to your partners?
StorageCraft's mantra is our recoverability solution. There are four components in our recoverability solution that, when used and used effectively, make up a very robust recovery. Those four components always start with a good, solid, reliable backup, and then the tools to be able to manage the backup. And then we, of course, need an off-site strategy, and we do that through replication, and then no recoverability solution or no backup and recovery solution would be complete without testing. And you have to test early, you have to test often, just like voting in Chicago. When those four things are put together, it goes into a really robust way of recovering. And so our recovery is at the center of our recoverability solution.
All right, makes sense. And recently you guys have announced some changes, and they're coming to market very shortly, I understand, in terms of how you're able to manage virtual machines when it comes to recoverability. Can you outline a little bit what is coming down the pikes for partners in that regard?
Absolutely. So in our manage area of the recoverability solution, we actually currently have a piece called Image Manager, and then we also have a piece called Shadow Control. And Shadow Control, you know, has been up to this point, you know, really kind of monitoring the backups and everything, you know, StorageCraft wise that's there. What's coming down later this month actually is the StorageCraft plugin for virtual environments, and what that's going to do is it's going to leverage VMware's vCenter, as well as Microsoft System Center's Virtual Machine Manager. And then from one pane of glass, as you're looking at managing your servers, your virtual servers, you'll also be able to manage your StorageCraft Shadow Protect backup. And so what that's going to allow you to do, everything from protecting your servers if you have a virtual machine that is unprotected, through this, you know, like, for instance, vCenter, you'll be able to go and you'll be able to push out a backup, or push out the StorageCraft Shadow Protect software. You'll be able to apply a backup job to that and be able to manage everything, be able to pull reports and logs and different pieces that you're able to do, but all just in one central location.
Obviously, it sounds like with the initial launch support for both Microsoft and VMware virtualization.
That's right, and it's really a tight integration that we're doing into the hypervisor management console. So you're able to do, you can monitor, you can manage all the Shadow Protect backups. It's going to make the day-to-day management easy, and ultimately, it's going to reduce your time of administering the solution, and also by reducing that time, will lower your costs associated in those different tasks.
Now, previously, under the current situation, you know, prior to this being out there and more integrated, what would that look like for a partner to manage some of these virtualized servers?
So currently, what would need to happen is that our software would need to be, the Shadow Protect software, our flagship software, would need to be installed on each Windows VM, and that would require the admin to log in to each server directly, install the software, and then schedule the job on each server. And when they have in the upwards of, you know, 20, 40, 50, 100, 200, 500 servers, obviously that would take quite a bit of time.
It's pretty arduous, pretty fast.
So what we're able to do then is we're able to take this and be able to have a centralized management piece using the tools that you're already familiar in doing, either vCenter or Virtual Machine Manager within Microsoft System Center, to be able to better have control over that. You can do it in just a fraction of the time.
All right. Great, pretty clear. Do you see this opening doors for new types of partners for you? I'm just curious if, you know, folks who are really heavy into administering vCenter or the Microsoft environment for their clients, if this is something that you know, sort of brings new partners into the fold, as it were.
In the small business sector, we've been really solid. What this is going to do is open up more doors to a more mid-market to enterprise area when you're managing dozens and dozens of virtual machines.
And the corresponding partners that go with that, I would imagine, are not. I mean, in some cases, they are going to be the same set of partners that you're working with, but I'm imagining there's going to be some new partners to the fold if this push into the mid-market and above proves fruitful.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So with some of our existing partners, certainly it's gonna open up more opportunities where we weren't necessarily a perfect fit into their top customers or their larger customers. Mm-hmm. But then you're absolutely correct. This will open up opportunities for us to with new partners that mainly deal with the middle, you know, the upper end of the small business into the mid-market and enterprise systems. Absolutely.
All right. In terms of training, learning curve, things partners need to know, what can partners expect sort of from launch day and forward in terms of getting up to speed with the new product and getting it out there?
So the launch will be later this month, mm-hmm. And when we do, and we'll do certainly our media launch, our marketing launch, and you can check out our website, storagecraft.com/plugin, and that will give all the resources that folks would need as far as the install and as far as being able to get started. We'll also, just like any of our other products, we will have webinars that folks can attend, you know, giving an overview and demonstration of the capabilities of the plugin itself.
Great. So there's what partners need to know about the upcoming plugins from StorageCraft. Sean, thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to you again soon.
That sounds great. Thanks, Rob.
All right, joining us now is Hugh Yoshida, CTO of Hitachi Data Systems. Hugh, thanks for taking the time.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Yes.
I understand you're making a tour in Canada, or at least in the Toronto region. I'm not sure which at this moment, but to share some of your sort of outlook for the year 2015 and what you're thinking is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we're doing an executive briefing center here in the Toronto office for customers here in this area.
All right. Great. And perhaps you'd be so kind as to share what you think will be some of the highlights and technology trends that will shape the year that will be 2015.
Okay. I'd be happy to do that. 2015, you know, I'm keying a lot of this off of IDC's prediction of the third platform.
Mm-hmm.
You're familiar with that, where the
yes.
mega trends are cloud, mobile, social, and big data. Okay, and that really will have an impact not only on the users of IT, but also the vendors of IT, to IT. So one of the first trends that I'm identifying out of this is the need for business-defined IT, meaning that IT will have to become more of a service provider than an infrastructure provider.
Mm-hmm.
and be more attuned with the business outcomes than with managing infrastructure. Because businesses need the agility and the elasticity that cloud provides. You know, they need the mobile to make the people more productive. They want social to understand the sentiments in the marketplace and, mm-hmm. and provide a closer connection with their customer base. And then the other part is the I lost my place here, but the big data. Mm-hmm. So changing, you know, from where we are with data warehouses and looking back at trends, but trying to do some predictive analysis based upon some real-time input. Okay. So that all makes the businesses more sustainable, more ahead of the marketplace, as it were. To do this, of course, CEOs must become more astute in regards to the business and be able to provide these services. From the vendor standpoint, the vendors to IT, they have to provide the tools that enable IT to become these service providers. So it's a major impact on vendors, and you're seeing this churn happening in the marketplace already, where, you know, companies like HP are spinning off their printer business. IBM is they're not selling it, but they're actually giving away and paying somebody else to take their chip business. Okay, as they reorganize around this. Because if you look at what's happened with cloud, like you take Amazon, for instance, they had a revenue in 2013 of about, I think it was $2.6 billion, but they displaced more than $13 billion of IT spend. So that means that the IT vendors who would have been able to capture that revenue don't have that revenue. So you see that the market is being deeply impacted by these new trends. We ourselves, you know, have, say, gone to one of our large customers and have displaced 80% of their infrastructure with a content cloud that we provide. So, again, that's reducing their IT spend by 80%. So the business is changing. If we're just in the infrastructure business, we're not going to survive. So we need to provide these enablers for business-defined IT.
You know, that's it's funny because it's speaking a lot, I think, at the enterprise level and at the big IT kind of level about the kinds of things that we talk about in the channel community all the time. You know, the need to have a services first message, the need to move from providing infrastructure to, and this is something that, you know, we've been really talking about even more, and it just keeps snowballing as this year mm-hmm. goes on. It seems that need to sell more the business outcomes end of the story rather than even the service for services sake side of it. How do you see that shift impacting IT solution providers, you know, both those who are working with Hitachi as a vendor and those who are not?
Well, you know, we all need to upskill things. We're not just selling boxes anymore. Our channels as well. Mm-hmm. Our channels also have to provide, you know, more services around these things. They're not going to just be selling boxes. If they are, the margins are going to be so low, they're not going to be making much profit on that. Okay, so we all have to be more in the services and software provisioning. When it comes to the hardware, you know, we can't compete with Amazon for just pure storage. Mm-hmm. Okay, they'll get a commodity board, put a processor on it, and you know, put that in front of the commodity disk and then network it all together. And we're never going to build anything that low cost. All we have to do is provide more value-added functions, like maybe, you know, that sort of storage is good for your Tier 4 type of storage, and that's what a lot of this, the data we keep forever but we don't really access, that's where that really needs to reside. And I identify that as another trend is more of the Tier 4 storage is going to be moved out to the cloud. And all the systems, our content platforms, our file systems, will have to have interfaces into the cloud, you know, through S3 or WebDAV or those types of interfaces. So you'll see more of that happening as another trend.
Okay. You've touched on this a little bit, but internally at Hitachi, how are you guys addressing this shift and change in business focus and in business culture, this need to be more like a service provider?
Yeah, well, we're undergoing a major change in Hitachi as well as Hitachi Data Systems. Recently, well, we've been working on this for over a year now. We are bringing together the Hitachi development groups and Hitachi Data Systems development. So we used to be Hitachi Data Systems was more focused on filing content, and Hitachi in Japan provided us with a lot of the infrastructure technologies, R&D. And so they are now reporting into one division we call the Global Information Solutions Division, and all this reports into Hitachi Data Systems CEO, Jack Dome. So now all of the development, R&D, manufacturing is now under one organization reporting to our CEO. So with this, you know, we're combining the very tight integration that you get in typical Japanese engineering, the very high quality with the better usability and the agility of, say, the Western approach. So you'll be seeing things like more acquisitions, mergers, and more participation in open source types of activities.
Okay. As you're talking to customers about this kind of thing, what do you find are the sort of the initial responses you get from customers, and where are they seeing or where are they wanting these changes the most and the most quickly?
Well, most of our customers, because we have been so successful in the storage area, view us as storage vendors. But we have been transforming our portfolios. Expanding, our biggest growth area now is in our converged solutions, where we combine our Hitachi servers, storage, and put the networking together, and then an orchestration layer that integrates into things like VMware and Hyper-V. And so convergence solutions is our biggest, fastest growing area today. Also, file and content is also a leading area. We do have, introduced an enterprise system last year, about mid last year, and that is taking off. So we're still gaining ground in the enterprise infrastructure space. But that is not, we believe going forward, is going to be more about converged solutions and about filing content. And it's being well received by our customers, as we find that a lot of the data that's being generated is unstructured data that really lends itself to content stores. The databases and the file systems can't contain the growth of data, especially the number of objects within a store. So we have to provide things like content platforms to be able to store all that, and to be able to store it a long time. What our customers also are looking for is better automation and integration, because if they're going to be more focused on business solutions, they want to be relieved of all the tedium of creating infrastructures. So, we have a long experience of, best practices around building infrastructures for, let's say, an Oracle instance or an Oracle database. Okay, instead of delivering infrastructure and then a white paper to our customers to do that, what we're doing now is we're providing automation. So we can take what's in that white paper and create a template, which can be easily installed by customers rather than having them, put that together themselves.
Gotcha.
So what they're looking for is just ease of use so that they can be more agile and be able to focus more on the business.
Okay. You touched on the transition to converged infrastructure, certainly something we're seeing across the industry, becoming a very crowded place, whether it's you're a traditional server storage vendor and that's your look into it, or some of the newer pure play who would argue for the hyper-converged infrastructure type of approach. What do you see as Hitachi Data Systems and Hitachi's competitive advantage there? What's your differentiator in the converged field?
Well, in the converged field, our differentiator is that we do have our own servers, okay, x86-based servers. But these servers are unique because we've developed them off of our long experience in the mainframe. So these are x86 systems that can also do LPARs, just like a Unix or a mainframe system. So with the LPAR capability, we can provide better utilization. We can reduce cost, licensing cost of the software. That's usually based upon cores, whether you're using them or not. We can provide LPARs that just limit it to the cores that are actually being used. So and because we own the server and storage, we can combine them very easily. We have common management across them from the beginning. We don't have to integrate management of a third-party server with our storage like other vendors have to do. It's all already integrated from the beginning. Okay. So all we do is provide an orchestration layer to, let's say, vCenter, and vCenter then uses that to configure the whole environment, you know, for a virtual machine, including the server, storage, network. And then we also provide the interfaces through their monitoring, so through their optimization software, they can optimize the systems as well. Okay. So full integration with upper layers. We do that also with Hyper-V, and of course plans are also to do it with OpenStack.
Okay. You touched on how, you know, server and storage used to be much more separate within the overall Hitachi structure. Now, obviously, with convergence sort of driving that together. How is that changing, or is that changing, who you work with as a channel partner in terms of did there used to be too much more discrete communities of partner, and how are you sort of managing that process as those two sides come closer together, the compute and the storage?
Yeah, you know, most of our partners do sell whole solutions. Mm-hmm. You know, they would sell servers from one vendor and storage from another. There were very few really storage-only types of vendors. They would usually sell a you know, suite of products to leverage their capabilities. So, but what we're looking for now is also more of these partners who can do integrations,
right?
Okay, who know more about the application side, how to utilize our capabilities, let's say, in an Oracle rack or a VMware environment.
So application is king. Does that include bringing in new partners who are perhaps from that world and not necessarily traditionally Hitachi partners?
Yes, I think more and more we're working now with integrators, okay, and a lot of these integrators are taking our solutions and providing cloud solutions to the customers. As you know, cloud is one of these bigger drivers, and some of these integrators will be able to leverage our technologies in providing their own cloud services.
Absolutely.
So, yes, yeah, the partner environment's changing. They also have to upgrade and, you know, focus more on those macro trends that we talked about.
Sure. Sure. How have the conversations you've been having with Canadian customers been going so far? And anything that you find is resonating particularly strongly up here in Canada right now?
Well, you know, we're talking about big data, and this is an area that's I'm getting good response to as I talk about big data efforts. See, one of the things we're doing is all of what we're doing actually now is focusing on big data, because Hitachi as a whole, we have an advantage in the area of big data because, you know, Hitachi Limited, 80% of what Hitachi Limited is about building machines that do create social infrastructure. Uh-huh. We build MRI machines, power systems, hybrid motors for our companies. And we're able now to connect all that together, and all these verticals now have a common information base provided by this Global Information Solutions Division that we have formed. Okay. So we provide an integrated approach toward big data, whereas other companies like you have your GEs or your Siemens, you know, they're certainly in the verticals, but they don't have the data systems infrastructure. You have IBM that has the infrastructure, but they don't have the verticals. They don't make MRI machines or smart cars or things like that. So we are in a unique position, and that's why you see this closer integration between Hitachi and Hitachi Limited. And so the big data things that, are resonating, we do have healthcare where we're providing a vendor-neutral archive so that you can get information from all those different modalities in a hospital and apply them to a patient's care. Another one recently, we've been very active in public safety, which, with all the terrorism threats that are around, is very important. What we're able to do is provide situational awareness, so connecting up different sensors in an area and mapping it to a location, mm-hmm. and then providing real-time alerts based upon the streaming analysis. And this is something that we're already doing with the Washington, D.C. Metro Police Department. About 50 different police departments already are using this type of technology from us. We're very successful in that. And as I talk to customers here, I was talking to a very large retailer, and they said, they would like to have this situational awareness about food distribution and storage and refrigeration. A lot of food spoils before it reaches the consumer. So how could they optimize the movement and storage of food to keep it fresh or get it to the consumer before it spoils? Some telco companies, they want to monitor the traffic to give a better experience for their mobile users. So a lot of interest here in big data applications.
It seems that no matter how many ways we find to kick around big data, Internet of Things, these kinds of issues, there's always some other opportunity waiting to be uncovered.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the way we're approaching it, what we want to do is provide an infrastructure for big data. Mm-hmm. So we build a template. And, the typical parts, you need to have an ingestion part, streaming and real-time or batch. And then you have to have the data metadata extraction and the data storage and then the data management, the analytics, both real-time and batch. And then you have the actionable analysis and then the presentation, a visualization. Mm-hmm. So this is all part of the big data infrastructure. And what we do is we provide a template for this. Essentially the plumbing, so that the big data scientists don't have to reinvent this plumbing every time. And we want to be able to reuse it for oil and gas, for public safety, for business analytics. So that's our approach to this. There is still a lot of customization involved in big data because the inputs and the outputs are really customized, but the infrastructure underneath that we should be able to reuse. And that's why I think we're having success in this area.
All right, perfect. Sort of the questions I had coming into this, anything else you wanted to add? Any advice you might have in closing for Canadian solution providers and where they should be looking or thinking about taking their business?
Yeah, I think they need to expand their solutions beyond just the data center. They should not be just looking at data center agility and data center operations. And those things are important, but the bigger prize, I think, is enabling that data center to become a business solutions provider, being a broker for services, business services. So I think that's where we need to lift our sights beyond the data center. For instance, a lot of data centers store surveillance videos.
Yes. Okay,
these cameras now have their IP cameras, their digital cameras, and they usually get stored in the data center. And the data center just stores it and then serves it up whenever security or somebody wants to look at something that's happened in the past. We now have the technology that as that data comes streaming into the data center, we can do pattern analysis, matching it on that. And if we say, for instance, we see somebody in a place where he's not supposed to be, we can immediately report that and take action. So we can be more proactive with the data, and there are technologies now to enable us to do that, mm-hmm. and we ought to be looking for those types of solutions. rather than just doing, you know, just storing things.
Right. Make it actionable.
Actionable, yes.
Perfect. Brilliant. Thanks so much for your time, Hugh. Pleasure chatting with you, and good luck with the rest of your tour.
Okay. Thank you.
There you have it. Another edition of the ChannelBuzz.ca podcast is in the books. I'd like to thank Steve, Sean, and Hu for joining us, sharing their insights, and I'd like to thank our sponsors for making it all possible, and of course, I'd like to thank you for listening. As I mentioned off the top, this is actually the second to last episode of the ChannelBuzz.ca podcast for 2014. We'll be back next week, once the turkey is digested and the mountain of wrapping paper cleaned up, with one more episode where we'll be joined by Cisco Canada Internet of Everything boss, Rick Huybrechts, who will chat with us about an explosive year for growth in the Internet of Things arena, as well as by John Bimefor of Avnet Technology Solutions, who provides the highlights of the distributor's Global Solutions Center. And after that, the next week, we kick off the new year in style with the beginning of the ChannelBuzz.ca year-end podcast series with interviews including Anton Granich of Nutanix Canada and Stefan Bockhop of Lenovo Canada. But until then, I'm Robert Dutt for ChannelBuzz.ca. Happy holidays, and I'll see you around the channel.